Okay, thank you very much. Especially thank you for the invitation to come back here this week. It's always a pleasure to be here. So we had many technical talks also in this conference, and what I want to do here is talk about precision fix, but rather make a connection between high precision calculations and LHC measurements. But first I want to tell you what is on this, what am I showing here. So this is a photo I took in a little tiny museum in Granada, in the city center in Granada. It was a museum about the history of Granada. But what I also showed in this timeline is essentially the main events that happened in all centuries. And so I was really quite amazed when I saw here the discovery of the Higgs boson in our case. So you see, really, people appreciate what we do. They appreciate exploring the unknown. They appreciate great ideas like general relativity. And this is regardless of whether they need it for the GPS in the car or not. They appreciate going to places we don't know about, going on the moon, going to Mars. So really exploring the unknown is something that we really, this is what we do, this is, but we have to be very convinced to push for this, of course. So, and we start by showing production cross-sections for the LHC. This is a plot you saw already a few times. So all I want to say is you see the beautiful many 8 orders of magnitude cross-sections that can be explored, beautiful agreement with the standard model, and the Higgs production processes are here. So they are not really the most rare processes seen. Let me make this bigger for you. You see the 4 main production channels, and there's beautiful data from 7 and 8 TeV for those channels. And to be concrete, let me give you numbers. So these are numbers at 8 and 13 TeV for those processes. And here I added also single top. Single top I sort of like because it also gives you an additional handle on the sign of the top you cover. And it's very sensitive to that. So if you look at these numbers, when you go from 8 to 13 TeV, of course, cross-sections increase. But they don't increase that much. So it's about a factor 2 for those processes and about a factor 4 here. If you look at the luminosity collected, at 13 TeV, we are a factor 6 down. And that's why the best measurement today for Higgs are always 8 TeV measurements. And so when I will show data, it will be at 8 TeV. And in fact, this factor 4 is also about what you have at 750. So even for the 750 GV, we're very excited about 13 TV data. In terms of statistical significance, the 8 TV data are the most significant, whether it is in the gluon channel and much more if it's in the quark channel. So we also know that the Higgs decays, and just to remind you how this, where we are, so we know this. Higgs is here, it's a beautiful spot to be because you have access to really many decay modes. If the Higgs would have been more heavy, many other decay modes would have been much more difficult to see. You would be somehow completely dominated by WW. And of course, so this is how the branchings are at 125 GV. Of course, things are difficult. They're difficult because mainly the Higgs decays into BB bar. BB bar is difficult because of the QCD background. Then the important decays to WW, but again, once you include leptonic decay modes, you really sort of lose on events that you can use once you include the all branching ratios. And so let me just say that in this talk, when I talk about Higgs, this is essentially what I have in mind, the standard model Higgs, so a fundamental CP Vm scalar particle with the potential we know, and the fact that essentially it is responsible for the mass and it predicts everything. Once you know the Higgs mass, all couplings, everything is fixed in the standard model. And this is somehow nice because it means you can test the Higgs mechanism very well. And in a way, we know it completes the standard model. It is a theory that remains consistent even if you go to really very high energies. Of course, we know that there is what we call the hierarchy problem. So it's the fact that the Higgs mass receives correction from vacuum fluctuations. And because it's a scalar, you have no protection. So you're really sensitive to the highest allowed energy. So if you say the standard model holds up to the Planck mass, then you're saying that there is a fine tuning of something like 17 digits. So if you take an analogy with thermal fluctuations, it means that you put a particle in a thermal bath, you wait for thermalization to happen, and then you measure the kinetic energy of this particle. And what you observe is that the kinetic energy of this particle is about 10 to the 17 smaller than the average kinetic energy of the thermal bath. So it's possible, but it's difficult that this happens without a reason. And this is really the same for the Higgs. So for the Higgs, in the analogy, we say, well, these energies are so different because red doesn't interact with blue. So there is some sort of screening mechanism. And this is the same that we do when we talk about Higgs. When you do model building, sort of solving this problem, what you do is you include additional interactions that screen your particle from becoming heavy. And we know that there are really many possible mechanisms and that sort of protect this Higgs mass, if you want. And of course, all these mechanisms, on the other hand, imply some modification of couplings, cross-sections, and the distributions. So properties, really. So this is why it's really very important to test, in particular, the Higgs mechanism. And in a way, the natural argument is that if you impose that there is no fine tuning, then you can say, what is the scale lambda? The scale lambda is not a Planck mass, but should be about a TV scale. This is somehow why the LHC was supposed to address this problem. And we know it hasn't happened yet, so we don't understand this yet, really, how the Higgs is light. But okay, what do we know about the Higgs today? This is roughly what we know. So we know very well the quantum numbers. We know that it's a very, very narrow resonance. We know the mass very precisely. We know that it is produced in all these production mechanisms that I showed you. We know it decays to fermions, to bosons, and that the couplings agree very well with what is predicted with the standard model. On the other hand, couplings to third generation are tested pretty well, to second are barely tested, and to a first generation not tested at all. And in terms of Higgs self-coupling, we have really only very loose limits that I'll mention briefly. So the signal strength shows you fully compatibility with the standard model, and it gives you an idea of about how much are we testing here the Higgs sector. It's about 10%. So the main Higgs production mechanism is gluon-gluon fusion. And we know one of the big things that happened is the N3 LO calculation of Higgs production in the large M-top limit for this. And what this plot shows is essentially the convergence of the perturbative expansion. So this is leading order completely off, and LO here with a big band, next to next, big jump, still a large uncertainty. And finally, what you see here is that once you go to N3 LO, finally the series stabilizes, you get a small correction, a small error, and the band is inside, the N3 LO band is finally inside the NNLO band. And so somehow, while this numerical is not very important to include this small effect, it is very important to know that it is small, that you have control on these numbers. And to sort of show you a bit these results in a bit more detail, so once you have a perturbative calculation that is so precise, you have, of course, to take into account many effects. And this is what I'm showing here. So, as I told you, this calculation is done in the heavy top effective theory. But what is done, so we know on the other hand the exact top bottom mass effects, for instance at Born order and also at NLO. So, what is usually done is to quote results in what is called this rescaled EFT. So, you rescale the leading order, the Born result, including the mass corrections exactly, and then you quote NLO next to next and NQ LO, including this rescaling factor. So, for instance, from NLO, you go here in this rescaled EFT, but then at NLO, we also know this thing exactly, and this brings you down a little bit. You include the NNLO, you go up. You include one of MT corrections that are known at NNLO. In expansion as one of M top, so this is a tiny effect. You include electrical corrections, and then finally you include this new number, this M3 LO. So this is how somehow you go from a very low number, about 16 up here, to this somehow this best estimate today, around 48 picobands. Of course, once you include so many effects, you also have to worry about all the uncertainties associated to all of that. And this is shown here. So this is the error budget on this number presented by the authors of the Fialo calculation. So you see, well, the main dominant error, you see it right away. This is from PDF and alpha S variation. Then second important error is scale variation. And one of the features of this calculation, you see it immediately, is that this error is sort of quite asymmetric. So this gives rise to lots of discussions of whether one should trust this or not. You have an error associated to the fact that you're doing an N-cube LO calculation, but your PDF is only an NLO. An error associated to missing electroweak corrections, missing top-bottom charm effects to higher order, to this expansion over on top, and to the fact that the calculation was done as an expansion around threshold. So it sort of, you truncated this expansion, so this also has a little error. So what these people suggested is that you should combine all these errors linearly and then keep separate to be added in quadrant to PDF and alpha S error. And then this brings you to this sort of best estimate from this collaboration here, group of people. And this is now under review in the sixth cross-section working group, and there are really lots of discussions. For instance, whether one should include or not a resummation when you quote a central value, whether you should do a 3 or 7 point scale variation, whether you should symmetrize this error estimate, whether this error is estimated in a conservative enough way, and so on. And also whether you should add errors linearly or quadratically, and how do you interpret the theoretical error. So this will result at the end in a sort of a new recommendation that will go in the fourth Fialo report. Now to see, okay, does this matter now? If we compare with experiments, this is the 8 TV comparison. So this is now this best number now at 8 TV, before I was discussing 13. And here you see data. So you see somehow at the moment, these discussions are still a bit irrelevant if you want. So this is a quote from an email that Reiser Burrow sent yesterday to the conveners. You see, he says, theory went ahead 15 years of experiment, and I think it's quite true in this case. But then he says, okay, but we still want best precision, of course. Now, this was all inclusive Higgs production, but we know that for Higgs it's very important to be able to talk about differential distributions. Why is it particularly important? Well, because when you want to study whatever, you get a better, you can optimize your significance by looking about classifying events into different categories. For instance, typically into different jet bins. Also, one has to keep in mind that for Higgs, most of the events come with additional jets. So you really want to describe not only Higgs, but Higgs plus jets precisely. And of course, you can extract a lot of information once you can access kinematic distributions, couplings, quantum numbers, and so on. So the most basic distribution is the Higgs transverse momentum one. One would think that this is somehow the simplest one, if you want, because it's very inclusive on all radiation. You're not sensitive to jet definitions, and you're also not sensitive very much to hadronization effects. But still, so I will come back to this distribution over and over. I will show you that somehow to discuss this precisely, it is still really quite difficult. But anyhow, if you want to start going differential, one of the things that you do is to look at Higgs plus one jet. And one very important result, we saw it here from Raja, is the NNLO calculation of Higgs plus one jet. So this is done now by 3 different groups. So it's nice because you can then compare independent calculation, benchmark, validate, and so on. And essentially, the outcome of this calculation is that you have a correction that is sizable. It's about 15-20%, so it is important. You reduce your theoretical error, but it's still not at the level of percent. We are talking 10-15% or so precision that you can get, despite the fact that you have an NLO. And what these people also did is to include the case of the Higgs boson. So here what I'm showing is a comparison then to data from ATLAS in this case, for really sort of, this is PT of the jet, or this is the N-jet exclusive multiplicity. So even in this case, you see that everything is compatible. There is no disagreement, but of course the experimental error was still quite large. Now, one important calculation I think that was not mentioned here is done by these people here, Moni Retorielli. So what they did is, first, they developed a new method to do resummation of PT in momentum space rather than going in impact parameter space. So they developed a new method, and then what they did here, they sort of show that they can reproduce our HQT results, so the best resum calculation, if you want, HQT here, they said same logarithmic accuracy, but then they also match to Higgs plus one jet at NNLO. So somehow at high PT, they have this additional 10% correction. So they have something that is really the best prediction in the whole spectrum. And okay, one thing that you see, for instance, from this plot is that once you go to these higher orders, the more orders you include, the less, if you want, the impact of the resummation is important. So you here, you, things agree pretty well with fixed order even at low PT. This is kind of expected, of course. Another interesting thing, I think, it's this result by Hamilton and Frederick. What they showed is they took this Milo merging method, and they showed that they can now merge not only two multiplicities, like Higgs and Higgs plus one, but they can develop a merging of, for instance, up to three multiplicities. And the way they do it, so the basic idea is that so the way Milo works is it adds a pseudoconform factor, and you have to usually know the NNLL resummation. But what they showed is that they can fit what they don't know about the resummation by targeting what they want to obtain once they integrate over phase space. So in particular, they can take the Higgs plus two jet and target the Higgs plus one jet after inclusion of Milo already, and then they can achieve something that is automatically NNLO accurate here, NNLO accurate, NNLO accurate. So somehow they get something that is very accurate throughout the phase space. And this is just a sample result that you, so you can look at things that involve or don't involve many jets. This is, for instance, Higgs plus two jets, the best prediction compared to the NNLOPS. NNLOPS is only leading order for this distribution. So there is an improvement here, I think. And it's really quite a nice idea. I think it has a lot of potential. The other thing one can ask is, okay, once you go to many jets, how much do additional jets matter when you go to high PT? And so this is a question that you can study. For instance, if you have an NLO calculation of Higgs plus one, two, three jets, you can merge this calculation. This is a more standard merging. And so this is studied by Gossam and Sherp. And what they show is that when you look at very high PT, essentially the three jet multiplicity counts as much as the two jet multiplicity and so on. So at some point you will run out of phase space, but these additional jets at the moment still count a lot at high PT. On the other hand, okay, one should remember these calculations are done in this EFT approach. So we know that this doesn't really work at high PT. And there is a big, so the EFT really overestimates the right answer. So somehow getting a correct Higgs PT spectrum is quite not easy, I would say. If you compare with data today, so this is PT spectrum compared to NNLOPS. So NNLOPS means NNLO for Higgs production, so NLO for PT Higgs. So of course there is, from the theory side, this number can improve quite a bit with the things I showed you. But you see that, I mean, at the moment the discrepancy is quite large, so 10-20% shift will not change much in this picture. So I think here it's really interesting to see what happens once you have better data here on this distribution, whether this tension remains or not. And now a really sort of nice work has been done by Kirill and Penn in the beginning of this year. So another tricky thing about PT Higgs is that they affect it not only by top loop, but bottom loops. One would think, okay, but bottoms are suppressed by the bottom mass. In fact, they start as mb squared, so one think they're really very small. But that's not true, because they're enhanced by this type of logs, logs of mb over m Higgs, or log of mb over pt. And so what they showed, they developed a method to resummer these locks, the abelian locks only, to all orders. And this is an interesting result, first of all, because it's a resummation of a non-Sudakov type log. But then they show that essentially these are percent corrections. And if you naively rescale the color factors, it really tells you that if you want to reach high precision, percent precision, you have to include these effects to all orders, also the non-abelian ones that we don't know yet. Now, the zero jet cross section is something I mentioned already. This is zero jet cross section is particularly interesting because we know that, for instance, when Higgs goes to the dominant mode, Higgs to WW, you're completely dominated by top background. But once you impose that there are zero jets, you become essentially background free from top. So it's really a nice cut to impose. This is shown here, right? Higgs to WW, when you have tops, you always have jets. If you veto on these jets, you completely kill this background. But of course, then you have to understand how much do you reduce your cross-section once you impose a jet veto? How much does your cross-section go down? And this is shown in this plot. You can study it as a function of PT. Right. When you go to very high PT, you get to the total inclusive cross-section. When you go to small PTs, of course, this at some point goes to zero. And the values sort of interest are here on 25-30. And what I'm showing here is an improved and updated prediction for this jet veto. So roughly, if you look at this, the red band is what we had 3 years ago, about a 10%. Uncertainty. And the blue is what we have now. You see, now this is one of the few distributions where really we're talking about percent precision. This is not easy to achieve. And this was achieved by essentially putting together many of the things that I told you about, a free LO correction to inclusive Higgs production, an LO Higgs plus one jet, mass corrections, and resummation of logs of the jet radius that per se are not very important at the end. So I think this is a nice example where you can put also many things together. Now, moving from GGH to VBF, VBF is a process that we know at NLO since many years, almost, I would say, 5 years. And the original calculation essentially said that the uncertainty is very tiny. You get very tiny corrections, even if you change your scales by a factor of 4, which is not what we do usually, it's more than what we do usually, you still get uncertainties of the order of 1%. So this would mean that you can really make accurate measurements. Now, this is two slides that I added this morning because I wanted to explain a bit the idea behind. So recently we could compute this in a fully differential way. And what is it's a very basic idea. The basic idea is that if you have a Born-like scattering for VBF, then knowing this momenta, Q1 and Q2, obviously fully specifies the kinematics of the incoming and outgoing. So it's a really textbook relation written here. But once you know this, then you can construct counter terms, local counter terms essentially, so that you can get a fully differential cross section. This is now shown at NLO, but the same idea also at NLO, by adding and subtracting counter terms where you project your kinematics to the Born kinematics. That is unique, right? So you get then this part of the calculation fully inclusive from what people had before using a structure function approximation. And this you can get from a simple NLO Higgs plus one jet code. So once you add this together, you have something that is fully differential with local counter terms. And the result of that is a bit shown here. So again, if you look at the ratio plot here, this is the ratio compared to the NLO. You see that the NNLO, you can have really quite large effects, about maybe 8% or so, and also really quite differences in shapes. This is, for instance, for PT Higgs. This is for the separation in rapidity between the jets. And this is one of the important variables because it's one of the variables you cut on. Right. So you see that, in fact, when you go differential, corrections are much larger than people thought before. And here I just want to flash, this is a preliminary plot from the Higgs cross-section working group where you put an NLO together also with electroweak correction, and you really try to give a best prediction, best estimate of the theoretical error, and so on. The other process is associated Higgs production. Now this also is something that we know at NNLO since few years. It's a 2-to-2 process, but it's really the Drellian-like process. So we know this since few years. And again, here the NNLO corrections are really small. We're talking about 1-2% effects on cross-sections, and a little bit more on distributions, but not much more. And what we did recently is to merge this with a parton shower. And we looked then at some particular regions that were suggested again by the Higgs cross-section working group. So essentially you look at regions where the PT is soft, the PT Higgs, where it's sort of intermediate hard, or where the PT is very hard. And in these three bins for PT Higgs, you look at whether there are or there are no jets in your final state. And then you can look at the answer at NLO. So you see different colors, you don't see them very well. One is NNLO here, and then it's once you include the parton shower with parton level or also with hadronization effects. And for instance, if you look here, you see that you can really get huge effects, about 20% effects. So despite the fact that you have NNLO accuracy, once you really look into these jet bins, you can still have very large corrections. And this is because the parton shower, you get a migration from different from one bin to the other. And these effects are difficult to control in a fixed order calculation. TTH is okay, it's one of the processes that is most difficult at the LHC. It's limited by statistics, and the backgrounds are very difficult, of course. So current limits are about 3 times the standard model expectation. It's interesting because it's sensitive, of course, to the top-u-cover coupling. And just as an example, these are fits done in the framework that Laura described yesterday, this kappa framework. You fit kappa F and kappa V only using TT Higgs, but different, looking at different decays for the Higgs. So you see that things are consistent with the standard model, but the errors are still quite large. Now, from a theoretical point of view, one of the interesting things that happened is the calculation of electroweak corrections. And in this case, it was quite interesting because people were saying that electroweak corrections essentially can spoil the dependence on the Yukawa coupling that you have, because you get this type of corrections as well. At the end, the bottom line is that these corrections are small, talking about 1-2%, unless you go to sort of boosted kinematics. When you care about boosted kinematics, which you do, these corrections can be about 10%. But these corrections are known also for the background, so somehow now they should simply be included. Another thing is, interesting observation done by these people, is that if you want to extract the Yukawa coupling, rather than looking at TTH, you should look at the ratio TTH over TTZ, because there are really many effects, many systematic effects cancel, many uncertainties cancel. Maybe I skip this. So Higgs self-coupling. So schematically, this is the Higgs potential, right? So in the standard model, the triple and quartic couplings are fully fixed. It would be very nice to measure these couplings, because something like this has never been measured before. The really self-interaction of a scalar particle has simply not been observed ever. And it is really crucial to pin down electroweak symmetry breaking. So can we do this at the LHC? Well, of course, the suitable process is Higgs pair production, shown here. But the sensitivity is quite limited. It's limited because you have these contributions and the interference between those two, right? If you look at the cross-section, we are talking about a factor 1,000 down compared to single Higgs production. And then you should remember each Higgs decay, so you pay a price, additional price for the branchings. And somehow, in order not to pay a too high price, this has been studied at the moment in hadronic decay modes as well. One can also see, so what happens to other channels rather than GG? Well, the other channels are much smaller, so these are essentially hopeless now at the LHC, and this is really the most interesting one. And if you look at the current limits today, this is about where we are, so about the factor 50, 70 above the standard model. And you can translate this number into bounds for the trilinear coupling, it's about the factor 17. So somehow these bounds are still very loose, even if you, this is already combining all these possible decay modes. If you look at theory predictions, well, What people have been doing is, like for single Higgs production, you go to the effective theory where you shrink this to a point. And then you can see how well this approximation works at leading order, and at leading order it doesn't work very well. So this is a function of Q. Q is the invariant mass of HH. You see the shape is different. But people have been still taking this, rescaling by the Born cause, exact Born, and computing higher order correction. So I don't go into details here, but many small effects have been computed in this EFT approach, rescaled EFT. And one interesting result we saw here by Gudrun is that she could compute this type of corrections, performing this integral numerically, but she showed that this is enough, you don't need an analytic result. So, and once you do the full calculation, she showed that in fact these effects can be really very large, as you sort of expect, of the order of 40% here in this region. So if you look at prospects for this at the LHC, I think it's something that will remain very difficult. So at the LHC, even at high luminosity, you really have to combine many channels. You have to use ideas, maybe using ratios of distributions, going to boosted studies, and still the sensitivity will be about 20-50%, I think, not much better. So here it's really, of course, a case for a future, a 100 TV machine here can, of course, say much more. The last topic, in 2 minutes. So this is something everybody knows very well. So the Higgs width is very small in a standard model, very, very narrow. So it's impossible to do a direct measurement. Why is that? Because if you try to profile the bright Vigna, the sensitivity that you have is about 1 GeV. If you look at the lifetime, propagation, really, again, the sensitivity is really of the order of 10 to the minus 9 MeV. So the bounds that you have from direct measurements at the LHC are really very, very loose. On the other hand, these people, a few years ago, had this sort of breakthrough idea, I would say. So the observation is trivial. They said if you take the cross-section of bright Vigna at the peak, it is sensitive to the width. If you go off-peak, this is completely irrelevant, so it doesn't depend on the width. So by taking the ratios of these two numbers, you extract the width. And this is such a trivial observation that one would wonder why was not this been observed before? And I think it's because people were thinking about it in this way. So people thought that there is nothing, because it's very narrow, there's nothing here to measure, right? But we know that things are different. So there is essentially a big enhancement in this due to longitudinal decays of the Higgs. So this is something that can be done, has been done, shown here. So these are the current limits, about 4 or 5 times the standard model from CMS or ATLAS. And of course, the criticism is that this assumes that the difference between on-shell and off-shell couplings is negligible. And one can construct models where this is not the case. So in a way, this is only a self-consistency check, if one wants. But okay, given this caveat, one can also exploit other channels, other modes. And one of the important things, however, is that here, in order to improve on this, you really have to have a very good control of off-shell cross-section, backgrounds, interference contributions. And these are all the things that are really quite tricky from a theoretical point of view. So I think there's really lots of work left to be done. And here, I don't know, it's not clear to me how well these limits can improve at the very end. So it brings me to my conclusions. So I think the discovery of the Higgs really leaves many open questions that should be explored at the RAN2 of the LHC. And precision calculations are really essential now to address these questions. And these calculations are making really huge steps. So you see, I try to show you that these uncertainties are really becoming smaller and smaller. And this is thanks to new ideas, new techniques, new methods, better observables. I think we can now talk about few percent precision when we talk about inclusive measurements, and a bit larger, sort of maybe 10% accuracy when we talk about distributions. And now, because you're getting to this precision, of course, just a perturbative QCD is not enough. So you have to worry about all these other effects, electroweak corrections, PDF alpha S uncertainties, non-perturbative effects, so many things. So things are still difficult. There's lots of work to be done. And I think in the last years, really, the progress in theory and experiment went together. In fact, I think theory is ahead of experiment, so we wait for experimentalists to catch up now. I turn to Dana.
Okay, thank you very much for this nice overview.
I just happened to notice the state-of-the-art cross-section calculation on slide 13 had a very asymmetric scale uncertainty. Is that trying to tell me something? It's really a naive question. I don't know.
Well, you get a different answer if you ask different people. So whether this should be, you could say, okay, you should take this uncertainty as is. You could say, I should symmetrize the uncertainty, because when I do scale variation, all I know is the size of these terms, but the sign of those terms have no meaning. So I want to symmetrize this and I get a large error. Or you can say, no, this is my theoretical uncertainty and there is no meaning in the central value. I want to move my central value a bit down and get a symmetric band. So, you ask different people, you get a different answer. And that's why somehow this, that's why this didn't happen yet, right? Because people are fighting about these questions.
But this is for
MH
over 2 scale, right?
This is for MH over 2, where it's so, yeah, on the other hand, there are compelling arguments to use MH over 2 rather than MH. So you can say the convergence is better at MH over 2, and you can say the typical hardness of QCD radiation is not MH, it's more MH over 2, it's softer. So, yeah. So the other thing is that, in fact, if you, instead of using the fixed order, you use a resum calculation, you get an uncertainty that is symmetric. That's why there is a discussion whether you should or not include the resummation, even if the central value doesn't move, essentially.
Yeah, so this nice way of computing the fully differential VBF thing. You said that the correction by 10% was larger than you expected. A large part of the answer was the inclusive part, so it couldn't have been unexpected. Or did it come from the difference term? In other words, do you have an understanding of why it is larger than, or where this comes from, at least?
Let me show the plot. So you're saying the large fraction of this comes from here? No, but the
I don't know. I mean, you said it was 10%. The correction was larger than
previously
thought.
Yeah. So this is what
you
can understand why these effects are so large. Essentially, these are NNL corrections after you apply VBF cuts. So the radiation makes your jets softer, so you're more sensitive to VBF cuts. So the NNL corrections makes the jets slightly softer, and so you get large corrections from that because you have a cut on the jets.
Maybe, can I ask a question? You showed this very large migration between jet bins due to Hartog-Sharon hadronization. So is that very sensitive to, is it known whether that's very sensitive to the Monte Carlo that you use for your matching?
We use PTS 6 and 8, and the pattern was the same. We didn't use Herwig. But yeah, it's not clear to me why these effects are so large, I have to say.
Just a quick question on this slide. So this is a very large difference introduced by the parton shower when you look at jet binning, and as you know, sometimes the parton shower disagrees with the analytic resummation when you look at exactly this kind of observable, for example in WW. Have you considered that? Are you looking at it now as to whether this is a solid statement or whether analytic resummation would predict something else?
No, the solid statement is that the uncertainty on this is large. That's the only solid statement. Not that you should take one of these three, right? No, I mean, there is no resummation for that. now, in particular not in the six spins. So something like this you cannot study yet with a resummation. Whenever it's available, that's what you do. You take this, compare with an analytic resummation, and then you validate it. Then you can, if you can really trust TNN Looper's pattern shower, then you say this is, at the moment, then this is my best answer. At the moment, this is not the case. All you can say is that you have to be careful, you have to assign large uncertainties here, I think.
I have a question on the TD bar Higgs. So you showed these electroweak corrections, which in the integrated cross-section are not very big, mm-hmm. but in some boosted kinematics, could you specify this a little bit more?
This is a bit shown here. I don't know if you see. So if you look at this plot, this is boosted cuts. So when you impose high PTs on the Higgs, and it's a bit, and then you see that these effects, so if you compare red to green, you see that these differences are about 10%. And this, on the other hand, these are regions that are interesting. So even if on the cross section it's 1%, one should, cannot say you forget about this. Yes. If you, even if you talk about 10% precision, you want the electroweak corrections.
Is there any other question or comment from the audience? Seems not the case. So thank you again.